With infinite complacence, people went to and fro over the earth about their little affairs, serene in the assurance of their dominion over this small, spinning fragment of solar driftwood, which by chance or design, man has inherited out of the dark mystery of time and space.
Why don't you ask me what it feels like to be a freak?
The power of a new generation.
Everyone here is mad.
Greetings, and you are listening to Savage Science Radio here at Jackalope 105 FM, and I am your host, Tracy Savage. Tonight, we're going to bring you a little something extra. The Amazing Meeting. If you've never heard of it, it's better known as TAM, and it was originated by James Randi, and it's an annual celebration of science, skepticism, and critical thinking. People from all over the world come to amazing meetings each year to share learning, laughs, and the skeptical perspective with their fellow skeptics and a host of distinguished guest speakers and panelists. This year's TAM will be held July 12th through the 15th at South Point Hotel in Las Vegas, Nevada. And if you want to find out who's going to be there and register, that's at www.amazingmeeting.com. And tonight, we're going to bring you a little taste of what you might be experiencing this year. One really great discussion that went on was about our future in space, and it featured Phil Plait as the moderator, and the panelists were Dr. Pamela Gray, Dr. Lawrence Krauss, Bill Nye, and everybody loves him, you know, and Dr. Neil deGrasse Tyson. It was one of the most memorable moments at the TAM 2011 Las Vegas, and I invite you to take a listen to this great discussion, and see if you agree with what they feel the future in space is going to be. Enjoy.
Howdy, everybody.
Sit down last.
Thank you for coming to this distinguished panel and me. We have, I don't have my notes with me. Perfect. So I don't know who these people are without my notes.
Bill.
Actually, in order on my left, we have Lawrence Krauss, a cosmologist at Arizona State University, writer of Quantum Man, a book about Richard Feynman. One of my favorite people on this entire planet, and you know, as an astronomer, I know exactly what that means. Pamela Gay, an astronomer who does Astronomy Cast, also known as Star Strider. Another old friend of mine, Neil deGrasse Tyson. I don't think I need to introduce him very much.
I love Neil. I love you.
A, you know who he is, and B, he's given the talk after this, so I'll let George introduce him more officially. And you know him as the science guy. I know him as Speedwalker from Almost Live. For those of you, the five of you laughing, awesome. Heel toe. Executive Director of the Planetary Society, Bill Nye. We're going to be talking about the future of space, and I do want to mention that I'm actually quite pleased to be moderating a very diverse panel, and in fact, the diversity should be very obvious to you all because two of these people have been on Stargate Atlantis, and two of them have not. So it's a pretty fair split with that. Sadly, Doctors McKay and Keller couldn't be here. They have a previous engagement in an alternate reality. So I'm trying to see the Almost Live fans and the Stargate Atlantis fans. Okay, see who else I can alienate here. Literally. The other day on Google, I got an alert that evidently Bill Nye and I are both employed by the NSA and the CIA. And, you know, we can split that. If you want NSA, I'll take CIA.
It's a living.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, those checks, they keep rolling in between Big Pharma and NSA. It's awesome. Now, for those of you here, There aren't too many of you here, I don't think, who have been to all of the TAMs, or at least TAM 1, which was in Florida in 2003. And I was thinking about this the other day. The TAMs last 3 days, roughly, 3.5 days, which is 1% of the length of a year. And there are maybe 4 or 5 extraordinary astronomical or space events that happen per year. So the odds of any one TAM hitting a specific astronomical event seems rather low. And yet, at the first TAM, literally during the TAM, we lost Columbia. Columbia broke up in February 2003, and that happened during TAM 1. During another TAM, the Huygens probe from Cassini landed on Titan, the moon of Saturn, and returned pictures. And I remember scrambling to try to get those pictures displayed so that we could all see them, and we saw them right here at TAM. Today, we are dealing with the last of the space shuttle flights. That picture is, in fact, right side up if you're on the space station. That is an unusual event, and that this
in
is
in orbit. There is no right side up.
That's right.
Near Earth, there might be.
You know, he's
just to clarify. Yeah,
you look better that way, Neil. That's good. Okay.
There still is a down, though.
Yeah, yeah, and well, that's an excellent point. There is a down, and Atlantis is going to land on Earth on July 21st. The 42nd anniversary to the day, depending on your time zone, that Neil Armstrong set foot on another world. And I will say, in the midst of this, we have another astronomical first, in that the Dawn mission is going to be orbiting the asteroid Vesta sometime today. This is a main belt asteroid, the second largest. It's going to orbit for a year, take close-up pictures. This was taken about a week ago. And it's in a year after a mapping mission, it's going to move on to Ceres, the largest of the main belt asteroids. I shouldn't be lecturing about this. I'm sure Bill knows more about it as the executive director of Planetary Society. And you can also follow Emily Lakdawalla, who blogs for the Planetary Society, and she's a fantastic science writer. But with all of these events happening now and seem to be happening with TAM, it seems wholly appropriate, especially with this really amazing panel, to talk about the future of spaceflight, the future of humanity in space, if not our direct presence, at least our proxies in space by robots. And I have been hearing over and over again, and I mentioned this to Bill earlier, that people are calling this the end of human spaceflight, or at least the end of the space program, that NASA is going to land the shuttle. We don't have a rocket system in place. Constellation, which was going to replace the shuttle, was scaled back and then eventually canceled. And we don't have anything going up in the future. And I actually want to keep this a little bit general and just feel you guys out and get your impressions about this.
I think it's far more sad that the James Webb Space Telescope is going to be canceled, because that involves real science and not spending money to orbit 90, 100-pound tanks of water around the Earth. And
he means us.
So if it is really canceled, there'll be no. That's the flagship of U.S. astronomy for the next 20 years, and it'll be like the cancellation of the superconducting supercollider 20 years ago killed
exactly
particle physics in this country.
That's exactly.
It'll
right.
be. It's a disaster, and so people should write your congresspeople and tell them not to cancel the James Webb Space Telescope.
Is anyone here not familiar with this?
So James Webb Space Telescope. James Webb was the administrator of NASA under Kennedy. So he had a lot to do with the Apollo program and what many people
just
think.
Just like in NASA, when you're called administrator, you are the highest ranking.
That's
person
the biggest
in
the deal.
Yeah.
That's the biggest deal. It's not Bill Nye's administrative assistant,
yeah.
Which is a big deal. But it's the head person. So the in the case of the superconducting supercollider. For those of you who don't remember, by the way, these are all United States things you're talking about. If you want to go to the International Space Station, you take a Russian rocket. They're fine. They work great. Soyuz rocket. It's not cheap, but it's considerably less than taking a U.S. space shuttle. Right now, a little over $1 billion a flight. $1 billion a flight. That's not a good bargain.
It's only right? $20 million if you're a U.S. millionaire and you want to go to
Russia. Yeah, well, then it's nothing to it. No, but so the thing is, the superconducting supercollider, the physicists, if I may, God particle love them.
Astrophysicist.
Went to Congress and said they're going to find, my recollection, they're going to find the Z particle or the
Higgs particle.
Higgs boson, yeah. Right? And Congress people looked at them. Well, that's fine for you guys, but we have wars to conduct and people to feed and so on. instead of saying, we are going to unlock the next secret of the universe, that would have been a little more compelling. Similarly, James Webb Space Telescope, everybody, think of how much we love Hubble. We love images from Hubble and how it has changed the world. And when Hubble went way over budget, people wrung their hands, wanted to deorbit it. That's a verb. But then when it turned out the mirror was made improperly, but then people made arrangements to fix the mirror. Okay. Same thing is going with James Webb Space Telescope. It's not the telescope that's the problem. It's management that's the problem. And so the universe isn't just expanding. It's accelerating, right? And you know why?
No. And
nobody knows why.
Yeah.
And so if you want to find out, you have to build missions like this.
I always like to say that no one knows why. And if someone tells you that they know why, they're lying, especially if they're a string theorist.
Yes.
Okay.
So...
do you know any?
One of the important things that NASA experimentally determined during the process of writing their most recent decadal survey is one should not allow planetary scientists or astrophysicists to budget anything, because we don't include contingencies and we underestimate and we screw up. And this was actually, they did something really awesome with a recent survey of the community where they asked the planetary science community to say, what should we do for the next 10 years? And by the way, confine all of your dreaming to projected presidential budgets, so this is a realistic dream you're coming up with. And the planetary scientists and the geophysicists and the astronomers went off and locked themselves in rooms and came up with really awesome plans and really, they thought, realistic budgets. And then NASA did something for the first time that was very wise. They sent all of the budgets out to commercial agencies to look over and check for realism, and they came back about 30% higher. Now, with the James Webb Space Telescope, this is a mission that I believe was originally budgeted under $2 billion.
It was $900 million.
Okay.
Originally, yeah.
Then it got bumped up to about $1.5, and they're now estimating that it's going to come out at $6.5 billion because they let astronomers budget it, and we shouldn't be allowed to. And Congress is looking at this and going, well, you guys clearly don't expletive know what you're doing. And rather than looking at us and going, wow, you guys know how to do science, we ask you to do something you're not trained for. They're trying to take away our toys. And the other problem is Congress is trying to get rid of $2 to $4 trillion of U.S. budget. And any of you who have ever written a budget before know that when you realize you're over, the first thing you do, which is stupid, but the first thing you do is just get rid of all the small line items. And you realize they don't add up to enough, but that's still the first thing you do. Every time I write a grant, the first thing I do is get rid of postage. And yeah, that's $200 and I'm $300,000 over.
So you're the one.
I am that one. But I write citizen science projects, so we'll get these people looking at the Dawn mission data he's talking about. So I want my postage back.
So human spaceflight is very expensive. And there's long history of this, but let me just remind everybody, whether you live in the U.S. or not, the reckoned in 2010 dollars. Like, how many people have used the expression, if they can put a man on the moon, why can't they blank? Well, in 2010 dollars, Apollo cost $151 billion. The interstate highway system, which is quite large and is used a lot more than by 12 people, cost, by the federal portion, $114 billion. So I don't think there'll ever be another investment in space exploration at that level, because it was really a result of the Cold War. That's why people went to the moon. But on the other hand, everybody's pretty satisfied that if you can get a human into a situation to explore things, the human does things very well, is sort of the best explorer you can get.
For now, in a matter of years, that won't be true, I don't think. So.
Mars Phoenix, Curiosity.
Hey, I'm a huge fan. Hey, I got the sundials. I'm crazy for Mars. Yeah,
but
the geology, I mean, I don't want to say. The other thing is, bear in mind, I mean, I'm from the U.S. I grew up in the U.S. If it's U.S. versus anybody in whatever speedball, I'm hockey, I'm generally U.S., but the Soviet Union put the first cameras on the moon, the first soft landing on the moon, The first sample return, the first Mars rocks came back from the moon, all robotically.
No, Mars rocks from the moon.
Mars rocks from the moon. Bill, dude, it's on my mind.
You're not supposed to tell anybody.
The first rocks. See, that's the kind of slip where you lose that CIA gig,
right? Oh, yeah, exactly. It was all done by Hollywood anyway. So
I apologize. The first sample return from another world was done robotically by the former Soviet Union. But people didn't really get excited about it, and the Cold War didn't get resolved until humans were there. But there's something to that.
We're about to move into a new age where we have SpaceX, which is led by Elon Musk, who did PayPal, and Tesla, who's the most amazing young South African. He's about my age and has, already had three major corporations. He's the most inspirational person that I've ever encountered. And I have no clue what was said, but all right. As we move into the future, we're going to be moving into a future where instead of having NASA running the show, we're going to have the commercial agencies launching as well. We're going to have the Mojave Spaceport, Spaceport America in New Mexico. We're going to have Virgin Galactic joining Virgin Atlantic as a way to spend your tourism dollars if you're stupidly rich.
But the problem is, I think that's all a scam. I really do. I think I just got asked about this. The point is that it's exponentially. Look, to go in Earth or near Earth orbit, to go the distance between New York and Washington above the Earth, maybe private industry can do it. But it's just the laws of physics say it's just exponentially more expensive and exponentially more difficult to actually explore somewhere interesting. And therefore, I don't think it's ever going to be. I don't think private industry has ever got the commercial payback is not going to be in the near term without the government.
I've been politely silent, haven't I?
I know. I was surprised.
I was going to use the word oddly, but okay.
I didn't think you were that polite, though, but it's okay.
I just want to clarify some of this information that's being bandied back and forth. There is fundamentally no business case for private. Can I finish the sentence?
I'm not sure I want to be here anymore.
There is fundamentally no business case for private enterprise to advance a space frontier. When you advance a frontier, you are making mistakes that the capital markets choose not to value. You have to create patents to enable things that you don't know will work. Anytime you are the first person to do something on that scale, the history of human civilization has demonstrated that the only funding available to do that is via governments.
Yeah.
And so what then happens is the patents get issued, the government figures out how to do it, they make it sort of routine, but they're inefficient because it's the government, then you cede it to private enterprise.
Can you give us an example?
Sure. The Dutch East India Trading Company. They were not the agency that found America from Europe. That was Columbus, funded by Queen Isabella. There was Magellan, also funded by Spain. They laid the groundwork to find out where to go, does the Earth have an edge or not, is it something worth doing? Then behind them, the Dutch East India Trading Company came to conduct business in a way safer than could have possibly have been economically justified had they been the first to do it. You look at the railroads that crossed the United States. Newt Gingrich mentioned that as entrepreneurs leading the way, but he neglected the fact that Lewis and Clark got there first on a major funded expedition under the Jefferson administration. So you lay out the land, you map the rivers, you map the terrain, then you've got an understanding of what the risks are for the capital markets to then value, then they come in behind. So I see any participation of the private enterprise in space exploration, not the first ones to go to Mars, not even to go back to the moon, but to make our access to low Earth orbit the efficiently costed exercise that it really should have been at the beginning of the shuttle but was never realized.
And that is what they're doing.
Why do we want people in low Earth orbit? I mean, I just don't understand. Why do we want people hanging out in low Earth orbit?
Because they'll buy seats to take a vacation there. They already have. The people doing it, the people buying tickets at $20 million a seat. So you make it $10 million, more people will buy the seat. Even more.
Absolutely. You're right. I think it's for entertainment
purposes.
So then
what are you arguing with me about?
Well, the point is, as a goal, as a national goal, what do you want? Why do you want people in low Earth orbit other than entertainment?
No, no, if it's commercial, there's no national goal. If it's commercial, it's whatever makes money.
Yeah,
I want them there because it will lower the cost of getting satellites for research into orbit.
Thank you.
No, no.
And,
why would it do that?
And? Is there more?
If NASA needs to go back to the space station, they don't have to launch one of their own rockets. Yeah. They hitch a ride on Elon Musk's
But hopefully
rocket.
We can get rid of the space station so they won't have to go there.
Whatever they will need, whatever is the need in low Earth orbit, NASA should not be the truck driver to make that happen.
I agree with you completely.
No, so...
As I always do.
So how do you... The analogy is Antarctica for me. Like, you maintain a scientific presence in Antarctica. You have people there. They think deep thoughts. I remember very well cleaning bicycle chains with chlorinated fluorocarbon, a carburetor cleaner. Can't buy that anymore because people discovered that it was hard on the ozone.
Yeah.
So you
killed the ozone.
Yes, I was the guy. So if you you maintain a presence in Antarctica and you maintain a presence in Earth orbit if there's scientific things to do there. But the whole thing, everybody, is you want to explore space at a reasonable cost. This is something you do as an intellectually sophisticated society with treasure, with money, with means. You explore, Lewis and Clark explored the continent. You explore space. You explore deep space because you don't really know what you're going to find. And I remind everybody that relativity was discovered barely a century ago, and yet everybody in this room got here on account of our understanding of relativity. I mean, you had your car navigation system. Many of you were on an airplane. And those are driven now by information from space. If you told my grandfather there'd be signals from space that you have to take into account both the gravity of the Earth and the speed of the spacecraft, he'd think you were nuts. But yet here we all are. And so there is a whole nother physics, yes, right there. Just it's so close that when we discover it, who knows? And this is what I grew up in the U.S. I mentioned that, but. What I've tried to do now, I wrote this op-ed, just remind people in the U.S. Congress and Senate that if you don't want to discover what makes the universe accelerate, maybe somebody in another country, maybe somebody from China.
But you agree with me that those discoveries won't be made by humans orbiting 200 miles above the Earth. They'll be made by wonderful spacecraft that are efficient.
Designed by humans.
Yeah, but designed by humans that actually are cost-effective. You said the key point. I mean, the difference between Antarctica and the International Space Station is, I don't know what the NSF, Neil probably knows what the NSF budget is for Antarctica. It's probably less than $50 million a year, I don't know. But the space station is a $100 billion tin can sitting up there doing absolutely nothing.
Well, so here's what would be really good use of it, is to get taikonauts on board.
That's Chinese astronauts?
Chinese space flyers would be fantastic. Because another Cold War or even the beginning of a Cold War is very, very expensive undertaking.
Well, and
anything we do to defuse it would be good.
That's actually one of the big problems that we're dealing with right now in terms of trying to make science in space something that's achievable. Because most nations in the world are dealing with economic crises right now. And China is doing quite well, and they're planning their own space agency. They have their own space agency. They've launched their own men into space. They're in the process of planning their own independent space station that's theirs. And if we could just partner with them
more. Because we denied their access to our space station, citing human rights violations. As a result, they said, we still want to go to space. We'll do it without you. And they built their own space program and became the third spacefaring nation to put a human being into orbit, and their ambitions remain high.
And this year they tested number one in science and technology.
So can we tick you off, Neil? I'll tell you, if I may, can we get questions from the audience? Because we can stand here and
I was going to go there in just a minute, actually. And by the way, Neil, when you do that, you're supposed to go like that, because that's the throwdown. But I want to point out that the governments are actually partnering with private space agencies, of course.
Those guys are benefiting from...
Right, so SpaceX has actually gotten something like $500 million from NASA.
And full disclosure, Elon Musk is on the board of the planetary site. So.
And their new...
I'm not affiliated, I just think he's awesome.
I'm just a big fan of SpaceX. And they're building their heavy lift rocket, which is going to be capable of 50 tons to orbit. At what he's planning is a tenth of the cost of the space shuttle.
That's That's probably right.
Yeah.
That's
so
and the company that produces electric cars that are yeah. going to be all over California.
Tesla.
Yeah, which are built in Boulder, by the way.
So they, we went to the factory, SpaceX factory, and looked at the engine. I got to say, I'm a mechanical engineer. I mean, I'm human. But, really? I thought you were an engineer. Yeah. These things are very clean, and the reason is that you don't have to have tubes running everywhere to transmit pressures from one part of the engine to another. It's very nice. And we talked to Jeff Rakiki, who's the head engineer, I guess, of structures there, and he said, you know, we didn't reinvent this thing. We took the NASA documents and manuals and just read them.
Yeah.
So to your point, all the patents and intellectual achievements were done 40 years ago, and these guys are re-embracing it. So it's good. And that's just one example. I mean, it's a good use. You know, lower to get into space takes so much energy. To get into orbit takes about 9 times as much energy. To get to what people like to call escape velocity is about twice that again. So it's an old thing called the beer can problem. The amount of liquid in a typical beverage can compared to the mass or the weight of the can is about what rocket fuel is to a rocket.
Yeah.
So you think about how much you could put in that little pull tab on the top, the little opener. How much electronics?
It didn't have to be beer. It could just be Pepsi.
I said beverage.
This is Tam.
You said it's called the beer can problem.
It's called the beer can problem, and it said
it's
the
just
weight
a can
of
problem.
The mass of beverage.
This is
that's
a really important.
Taking it to a whole different.
This is
realm.
A vitally important issue, but that's the reason, one of the reasons why I proposed a one-way trip to Mars. It's part of the reason is that coming back costs so much because you got to send the fuel there to get them back. So it's much cheaper, much, much cheaper to send people one way.
So are there volunteers? Because
Neil? No, anyway.
There's several people that I would like to send one way. but it's, my understanding is that their qualifications are different. Yeah.
So let's see.
I need to bring Lawrence to a new place, if I may.
Oh, wow.
Is it Mars?
Okay. No.
I'm slightly scared.
Lawrence, my distinguished colleague to my left, has a, let me say, party line position of the scientific, many in the scientific community, that the MAN program is largely just a waste of money. That you take that same money, and for every chunk of money that you spent putting a human being wherever you were going to put them, you can send 100 unmanned probes.
1,000.
To go 1,000.
It's probably
somewhere between 100 and 1,000.
Yeah, it's factor about 10. We're astronomers.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Okay. So that is surely true, and I have no argument with that,
but it assumes
that NASA is your private science funding agency. But the history of NASA's funding profile has never betrayed that fact. If you look at the fraction of NASA's budget over its 53-year life that has been given unto science, it will average at about 22% of the total budget. It peaked in 2004 at 40%. The recent average has been about a third. It has never been more than a half.
Human spaceflight.
The fraction of the total NASA budget given to science has never been more. The average has been down in the 20%. So what that says is NASA was never budgetarily driven by science motives. NASA, from its inception.
Oh, we don't know.
We don't want to talk about conception here.
NASA, from its inception, as Sir William, to my right, duly noted, was driven by Cold War politics. Let's be honest with ourselves about this. The very speech that we all remember and resonates in our cranium, President Kennedy saying, "We will put a man on the moon and return him safely to Earth." You can even hear his Brookline accent as he recites it in your memory. In Kennedy Space Center, Florida, there's a bust of Kennedy. And chiseled in the granite in the main entrance are those words. There's a lot of other granite there with nothing chiseled into it. What they could have done was put another sentence from that same speech But they didn't. Here's a sentence from that speech. If the events of recent weeks, Yuri Gagarin had just come back out of orbit, and we did not yet have a vehicle that could safely put a human being anywhere off the launch pad, he said, if the events of recent weeks are any indication of the impact of this adventure of the minds of men, then we need to show the world the path of freedom over the path of tyranny. That was the battle cry against communism. That was the war driver. That's what dislodged the $100 billion from the American coffers to send us to the moon. Let us be honest with ourselves about that. The budget for NASA has always been historically driven by geopolitical forces. Given that fact, if you want to have the argument that it shouldn't be a geopolitical force, that's fine. But you cannot say, you cannot cry foul because it's not science. That's apples and oranges.
Well, let me come to your place. So first of all, you're absolutely right. The same, by the way, is true from the field I originate from, particle physics. The huge funding for particle physics was also a remnant of the Cold War, a remnant of the atomic bomb project, basically. The fact that big science was felt to be in the national interest of national security, even if it wasn't.
And by the way, what year did the
super collider
get its funding reviewed and then cut? It was the years shortly after peace broke out in Europe.
Yeah. Okay, but there were other reasons.
That's when they cut. No, but you can say that there are other reasons, but I submit to you that there is no greater driver than the war driver. And that's why every one of your particle accelerators was fully funded for the entire duration of the Cold War.
Yes, but let me make the point clear, though. you're absolutely right that we shouldn't assume that everything is for science. What I think we should assume is that we should just be a little honest. About a little over a decade ago, I actually testified for the House Committee with Buzz Aldrin on the future of space exploration. And my point is that I don't think human space travel is a waste. It's actually for adventure. I grew up staying home from school watching the Apollo landings. That excited me. We've all been on stage with astronauts, and we know how excited people are just to be near them. And so the point is, I just think we have to be honest. We say we send humans into space for adventure, and we do other things for science. And if we're honest about it, then the science budget won't somehow keep getting cut when there's cost overruns for the International Space Station or something like that.
But the irony is we use the international arguments to rescue the funding in some cases. The International Space Station is basically the stinkiest thing on orbit, from what I understand. It's a men's locker room that occasionally has women in it. And the reason that this...
Are you saying men smell worse than women?
Yes.
I'm saying men's locker rooms smell worse. So
how do you know that? No, I'm just
we're not going there.
I'm skeptical.
But one of the reasons that its funding was saved all the different times that it almost got canceled is because of the large number of international treaties that went into having the U.S. launch all of the pieces for other nations that forked over funding and started building things. And at a certain point, you really don't want to piss off all of your allies by canceling their favorite
toy.
These
are just the simple geopolitical drivers.
But the SSC got canceled. It was an international thing. The James Webb Space Telescope is an international thing. And
what I'm hoping is we can rescue James Webb, in part as we rescued Fermi. The Fermi mission, which Phil was part of, almost got canceled a number of times. And it was through phone calls, which actually severely ticked off the then NASA director to the point that he told all of these astronomers that we needed to sharpen up and behave or be sent to the, I kid you not, he said we'd be sent to the children's table next time we call all of our senators. All of your senators.
That's a quote. Pamela and I were in the audience when he said that.
And we were sitting next to each other.
Was it Mike Griffin or somebody?
Was it Griffin or was it? Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, it was
like
Griffin.
Yeah,
it
sounds like Griffin.
But
call him Mike.
But the hope is... We flew NASA instruments on the Chandrayaan mission that orbited the moon. We had Beagle was something that we weren't totally part of, but we were part of getting it there before it crashed and did nothing good.
They thought of it as an instrument more than a spacecraft. That's what they
Cassini and the Huygens probe, that was, again, an international collaboration. Over and over and over, the way we're accomplishing science is to have different nations build the things they're best at. Canada makes the best robotic arms in the world. So, to do science, we need to collaborate. And I have no idea why Canada just got wooted that much, but my husband's Canadian, so I thank you.
The Canadians are moving further south in America, apparently.
With global warming?
So, you want to take questions? The whole thing we want to explore space at an economical cost because we don't know what we're going to discover. And the word explore is a great word because when you explore, no matter what it is, you're going to make discoveries, and you're also going to have an adventure. Those two words are in the word explore. Mm-hmm. So the word explore is great, but it has been at NASA, they have this thing called the Exploration Mission Directorate.
Yeah.
And that means human spaceflight.
Yeah.
Instead of what you might think of it in the bigger picture, like a telescope or a microscope or what have you. So I'd like to take questions, you all.
Yeah. We do have a few minutes. I don't suppose anybody has real questions, right, for this group?
And while someone's coming up to the mic, I realized I have to say I have NASA funding. I am not speaking for NASA. Everything I say is strictly my own opinion. Standard disclosure. I like my funding.
Go ahead, George.
Here we go.
My boy Kurt Vonnegut once said that when in writing, always put a human character in a setting if you want people to pay attention and be interested in it. And he said that people didn't pay any attention to the space program until we started sending human beings up there and human beings to the moon. So it may be far less sexy to send robots up there. But my point here is sorry.
Make sure that's your question.
Okay.
If we were on a game show,
yes,
can
yes.
you state that in the form of a question?
Ex-JREF staff, Sean McCabe, everybody.
I know. Anyway, so my point is, even if it's less rational and less practical, what if we need that sexiness factor of sending human beings up there to get people interested in space and funding space in the first place?
Mars Phoenix.
No, but,
it tweeted itself as a little person and was fallen in love with, and when it died, it was immortalized in Wired magazine by people who cried at the death of a Twitter feed that died with a robot.
But, you know, I think...
Wait, that's delusional. I'll explain why.
I agree.
Okay, Neil, go ahead. I'll speak later.
Allow me to explain.
Okay.
The reason why there's so much interest in that Twitter feed is because the manned program was not itself advancing an exploration frontier. Had they been doing that at the same time, no one would have given a rat's ass what the robot was doing. And that's what was implicitly recounted here with the moon. In the 1960s, there were robots on the moon. Did you hear about any of them? No, because the manned program was advancing a space frontier. If you do both simultaneously, we're going to be listening to the tweets of the astronauts and not of your robot. That's how that happened.
Without
the manned program, the robots look really sexy.
I hate to agree with Neil at all, but...
Phoenix was cute!
No, but there's some sense to what he said in this case, but
Does anybody know exactly when it lost
control
of this?
The point is, I think you're right, and the fascination with humans in space is, in my mind, is one simple thing. They can die. We all want to wait and see if they're going to die. And that's the only interest in it. We want to see if they're going to die. And that fascination is hard to match with a robot dying. I agree completely. But at the same time, one can create, I think, when you see, you know, the Huygens probe, for example, was brilliant in my mind. Put a microphone on it, and you can go to the webpage and listen to it land. And then pretty soon, with what we're going to be able to have with virtual reality and the ability to have images, you will be able to be on another planet with a robot and feel like you're there. And I think at that level, it's going to feel like we're there. But I think it's very hard to compete with humans. There's no doubt about it.
On that line, are we going to have the next TAM by Skype?
Please,
are people not going to come meet like this? Are we going to do it all robotically?
He shoots, he scores.
My point is, if we didn't look, you know what?
20 years.
If the Randi Foundation weren't so wealthy and no people couldn't afford to put it on, we'd have it all by Skype if that was the only way we could do it.
And at the end of the day, the thing is, manned spaceflight, kind of awesome, kind of wish I could be part of it. But there isn't the budget in the world right now to do it right. We want to learn, we want to explore, we want to do science, and we have to use robots to do that.
Hold on. I'm sorry. Should I just calm down?
No, bring it on, Dr. T.
Here's the proposal.
Testify.
Plus, we got questions.
Tell the truth.
I want to make sure we get the questions, but I got to rebut that. rebut that. Okay. To say there's no budget in the world, the federal budget is $3 trillion.
Doesn't go as far as it used to.
If you...
Yeah, it used to be real money.
If you want to count to a trillion, it would take you 100,000 years, and that's one number per second every waking and sleeping moment of your life. That's how big that number is, point one. Point two, it's not that we can't afford it. It's that we have chosen to not afford it. Mm-hmm. I tweeted recently that the U.S. bailout of the banks exceeded the 50-year budget of NASA. You want to put something in context. If you want to do something with $3.5 trillion, you can do whatever you want. Whatever you judge to be important to the profile of the nation that you were trying to build and to sustain. So I submit to you that when you look at the NASA budget, and I'm tired of saying this, but I'll have to say it again. The NASA budget is 4/10 of one penny on a tax dollar. If I held up the tax dollar and I cut horizontally into it 4/10 of 1% of its width, it doesn't even get you into the ink. So I will not accept a statement that says we can't afford it.
I got to say, that's Dr. T.
And do the thing.
I really do look at it differently. If you're going to tell me I can cut that much of a bill off, where right up to the ink, that's a lot of money.
To me,
if you gave me the budgets being slashed from 19 to 18.7 now to 16 point something,
yeah.
If you gave me $16.9 billion, I should be able to do something.
Exactly.
I should be able to get something done. But we have a legacy of these NASA centers all over the country that's left over from the Cold War, and that's got to be shaken out. It's a long way to go.
The James Webb Space Telescope overrun is less than the cost of air conditioning in Afghanistan.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I'm right there. No, I'm a huge fan of James Webb. I mean, bring it on.
Last week I was talking with David McConville, who's the president of the Buckminster Fuller Institute.
Oh, yes.
And he said that one of the elephants in the room around space travel, in terms of tourism, space tourism, is the impact on global warming. Do any of you know anything about that? He said it was astronomical. I forget the figures.
Is he talking about the carbon footprint?
Yes, mostly, I think.
Oh, yeah, no, it is kind of gross.
Well, we'll cross that bridge, people. And climate change, you know, is the biggest problem. And so when you look at the Earth from space, I submit you are going to make discoveries about climate change that you wouldn't make.
But we're cutting looking at Earth from space. That's the problem. We've also cut the missions that are going to look at Earth from space to probe climate change.
What's the carbon footprint on a hydrogen-oxygen fuel tank?
It's the fuel tank isn't the thing. It's hauling the fuel there, cooling the...
Cooling it down.
It may be making the tank.
Petroleum products that maintain the refrigerator and all that stuff.
It's like your Prius is made of plastic, and that's a problem.
Yeah. And they're solid rockets.
But we got to get questions. Okay. And the solid rockets.
I have a very simple and slightly juvenile question for all five of you. I just want to know what each of you think is like the next big thing that we should be doing. Like, there's a lot of people that say Mars, Earth-like planets, or robotic missions. What is each of your next big thing that you think we should be doing?
You double NASA's budget and you do it all.
The trouble is you won't do it all if you double the NASA budget.
So for me, there's two things. I want to know why the universe is accelerating. That's a big deal for me because I suspect it's the next relativity. It's the next classical physics. It's the next world-changing and maybe even source of energy. Then the other thing...
No, it'll never... Sorry. Let me make that clear.
It won't be.
Except being here. No, anyway, no, it won't be. It can't be a source of energy. Please don't say that. You're going to encourage lots of crackpots. It is not a source of energy. It's the energy of empty space. If the energy of empty space could get any lower by working, then it wouldn't have energy. It's not a source of energy. Please don't tell people.
We will never break the sound barrier.
Yeah, exactly.
We will never...
The energy of empty space is...
Actually, I agree with Lawrence.
Well, no, my claim is that by looking for this thing, you will make discoveries. That's my claim. Then the other thing that I'd like to specifically do, I'd like to send the right instrument to some gully on Mars where there's a undersand glacier oozing super salty water off the wall on a summer day and look for fossil Mars probes.
Yeah.
And stranger yet, crazier yet, something that's still alive. if we discovered life on another world, it would change this one in the same way Copernicus and Galileo and those guys changed it. Now, this is something you don't just throw a few trillion dollars at it. You work at it. Take a few decades. But that discovery or that proof that there was no such thing, it would also be remarkable.
And it wouldn't be that expensive. Most of it could be done without humans. And,
yeah, well, humans would build this stuff. I got a
feeling. But I think the discovery of life, of at least conditions for life elsewhere, is something that is driving and probably one of the most interesting things. It doesn't, I agree, I think we need to go to, I would be amazed if we didn't find evidence of life on Mars and find it was our cousins because we pollute each other. And we've discovered that. The objects go between the two planets, and certainly microbes can live long enough for that short duration. But we'll also look at...
You can find Mars rocks on the moon,
Yeah. And you can find them on the Earth. That's right. But, as we've just heard. But we also want to look for life elsewhere, and we'll be able to eventually be able to image planets and look for oxygen atmospheres, for example, which is... The oxygen on Earth only exists because of life. There was no free oxygen on Earth before life. So that would be a wonderful, wonderful probe. As one of the people who helped discover dark the energy of empty space, I'm fascinated by it. But I actually think, unfortunately, that's going to be it's unlikely that we're going to learn much about that in the lifetime of anyone in this room experimentally. It's just a problem, and I could go into it, that's very, very, it's the most fundamental problem in science, in my opinion. But I think it's going to require a good idea before an experiment will help.
So we shouldn't inspire people to look for it.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, we should.
Because it's impossible.
Yeah.
I'll add that JWST would go a long way towards figuring out dark energy.
It's just cool.
What?
Yeah. JWST will go a long way towards
It will not. It'll go a long way towards discovering the primordial black holes and the origin of structure in the universe. It's profoundly interesting, but I think it's unfair to say. I really worry about hyping things when I know they're not going to do what you say they're going to do. And I think JWST is plenty interesting without pretending it's going to tell us anything about dark energy.
Hubble telescope did 100 times more than what anyone ever projected.
Exactly.
For.
But the stuff we didn't expect, not the stuff we did.
Okay, so let's. So why don't we...
Well, now hang on.
Okay, so you're saying lower our expectations for the things we expect and heighten our expectations for the things we can't figure out what to predict.
Every time we open a new window on the universe, we are surprised.
And
that's the reason. That's the reason to open the new windows. Because you shouldn't listen to theorists like me, because...
We figured that out earlier.
This is the big thing.
Good one. Actually, that's your best line so far, Neil.
So why are you looking at this new horizon? What are you going to find? We don't know.
We don't know.
That's
exactly.
Why
it's a surprise.
New Horizons is going to find the surface details of Pluto.
Oh, man. That's going to be... No, listen. I took the wheelbarrow full of postcards to Senator Mikulski's office to keep the mission to Pluto going. You know, it's going to arrive in 2015. Yeah. So stay tuned. It will be fabulous.
Can I just give my favorite mission, which doesn't exist and isn't funded now, but it'd be really cool?
Yes.
It would be to go to Jupiter's moon Europa.
Yeah.
Which has an icy outer surface. The gravitational stress on Europa from Jupiter and other surrounding moons is pumping energy into it, much the same way when you warm up a racquetball by hitting it. You distort it, it bounces back to shape, you're pumping energy into it. That has melted the interior ice. It has had an ocean of liquid water that's been liquid for billions of years. And every place on Earth we find liquid water, we have found life. I want to go ice fishing on Europa, put lower submersible, look around. And for me, the biggest question will be, what do you call that life? It'd have to be like Europeans, right? Because it's Europa. That's what I figured.
Europeans.
I think we should go a lightning round here where only one of us can answer. We have to answer it quickly so we can get through everybody.
You want to talk about dreaming an impossible dream.
We're not going to get to everybody, but we're going to have one more good one here. All right.
Do you think the concept of a space elevator is possible, and if when?
No. Next.
No.
But bear in mind that the space elevator is this thing that's so strong for its weight, you could just take an elevator into space. But once again, the political problems are going to be the hard thing. You know, if the thing comes loose and starts whipping around, and then who's going to build and who's going to be responsible, the ultimate high ground and all that stuff. But
you might use it to drill into the Earth and drop a black hole.
Okay,
you know,
next question.
One more here.
Anyway,
one more.
Yeah, and
here
those materials will change the world.
I knew it.
Manned interplanetary spacecraft, solid shields, or electromagnetic?
Electromagnetic.
You mean like solar sails?
No, he means shielding from the cosmic radiation.
Shielding problem.
I'll go electromagnetic,
I go, not at all.
He goes, surprise, with cancer.
I rarely have an opinion about hardware.
For real, last question. Here we go.
Why don't we spend more time talking about the economic benefit of big government science, which is technology development, the spinoff of which has paid for the space program dozens of times over?
I agree that that every time we spend a lot of money, there are huge spinoffs. But one of the problems that I think about doing that, and the SSC had this problem, is we talked about all the spinoffs of doing particle physics, but we didn't do what Bill said you need to do, which is you can't justify a program by its spinoffs. You got to say it's worth doing because it's worth doing. And if you start to justify it by the spinoffs, people start to say, well, you know, why are you doing it in the first place? So there's no doubt that when we spend any amount of money, we make technological breakthroughs. But I think you have to justify it for its own sake first.
I would claim that if all you did was say we're going to innovate technologically as one pathway towards economic growth, and the other pathway would be we're going to Mars, who's coming? And everybody who's the best student in their class chooses that as their profession rather than becoming investment bankers, then you're going to innovate.
Yeah.
One more.
One more.
As Phil could tell you, there are plenty of ways in which space can kill us and wipe out the Earth. And so some people in the more romantic state of mind think of human spaceflight as a way of ensuring long-time survival of the species. Is that at all a part of these discussions at this time? Is this just an individual driver for people?
Well, you look at the cover of the TAM-9 brochure. What do we call it? The episode guide. Yeah, program. It's this whimsical thing about the future, but terraforming Mars is not as easy as it looks.
But it is. I bet we'd all agree, though, at some point in the long-term future, the future of humanity is in space. It's a part of. We want to diversify. We're all in a one-shot thing here on Earth, and so I have no problem with ultimately colonizing other systems.
It's delusional. I'll tell you why.
Shh.
Oh.
This crops up in a different way. There's a mission. There's a telescope called the Large Synoptic Survey Telescope, 10-meter telescope designed to survey the sky once every 3 nights from the southern hemisphere. One of
it's
the
not
major
going
ways.
To orbit.
Shh. One of the major justifications for its funding is it could find that killer asteroid and give us years, and I know this because I narrated the NSF video they're showing. It'll give us a couple years chance to figure out how to get that sucker somewhere else other than killing us. And so we can justify science by saying we're going to prolong human beings by protecting our own planet with the LSST in this case. So
the
you can fund science by saving humans.
The only preventable natural disaster is the near-Earth object getting too
but
near.
But I have to rebut Larry here.
Lawrence.
Yeah, thank you.
Lawrence.
Neil, make it short because our keynote speaker is a real diva. So
okay.
I don't want to eat into his time. Because you know what he's like. So real short. Here we go.
It's real short. I'm guessing, Lawrence. Maybe I'm wrong, but I'm just guessing that whatever it takes to terraform Mars and move a billion people there so that we're a multi-planet species, so that one planet does not go extinct from an asteroid, whatever effort that is, that's probably more than what it takes to deflect an asteroid.
I agree with you there. Absolutely. I agree with you there. But
we agree.
So the notion, let's live in 22 planets so we're protected.
Oh, no. I don't mean it protected. I think we will eventually colonize other systems.
But you said it to protect the species, and that's
okay. Well, fine.
Well, we only need to move two people to Mars, then. Yeah. I read that in a book.
Adam and Eve.
Really fertile people.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, by the way, I won't tell you.
No. We are out of time. This has been an interesting panel. I probably should have participated in some way, but there you go. Let's thank our speakers. We have Bill Nye, Neil Tyson, Pamela Gay, and Lawrence Krauss. Thank you.
And Phil Plait, our moderator.
The Planetary Society will have a table tomorrow.
Thanks. That was good. That was good. Neil?
Oh, you crazy kid.
Well, there you have it. These experts have weighed in on what they feel the future of our space program ought to be, what direction we should be going in, the implications of what we're doing now and the impact it would have on space exploration and what it means actually to our Earth, because there's a lot of ripple effect with this knowledge that we gain by sending the probes out. And the James Webb Telescope program in particular, which we talked about on this show. You know, you can always write to your congressman. Every voice counts. Even if you don't think that it does, it does. It matters. You matter. I matter. We all matter. And so get motivated, you know. Be proactive. Help them understand how important these programs are to us and our knowledge about the world and universe in which we live. If you want to know more about what's going to be happening, like I said at the beginning of the show, go to the TAM website, which is www.amazingmeeting.com, and you can find out how to register for it. You can go and see what days who's going to be speaking, and more about it than I've had time to go into here on the show today. I'd like to thank Nick Peluco for the great show graphics, and Dennis Bond and Hawk Productions for that fantastic intro we use every week. Todd Sheets, my executive producer here at Jackalope 105 FM, and I hope you have a wonderful week. Keep your powder in your pants dry, and happy trails until we meet again.